Good morning. How many of you all work in community engaged activities? Excellent. How many of you teach public health? Cool. Very nice, diverse group. I'm hoping that what we share with you today will help you in some way in your work. I work at the University of Arizona in the College of Pharmacy, but I do environmental health outreach and I do research in environmental health literacy for the library school as well. So let me see if I can make this all work. Okay, so what we're going to try to do today from my perspective is to discuss my recent research, describe some connections between functional literacy, health literacy, and science literacy, which we feel is the nexus of where environmental health literacy lives. We're going to discuss some issues that I've discovered in American Indian communities, and maybe talk about how the field of public health and environmental health coming together can be advanced by this work. So there's a definite serious problem with low literacy and low environmental health literacy in the United States. So about 50% of any community is functionally operating at maybe middle school level, and maybe their science level is about the same. Although sometimes, you know, someone who doesn't read well actually knows more than they can read about. In my own dissertation research, we discovered that people could learn from fairly complicated text, but if they were given the choice between a simple text and a complicated text, they would choose the simple text. And so this is kind of where I begin thinking in terms of assumptions and whatnot. I think the problem here is the mismatch between what people think and feel about how the environment affects their health and the information that we give. And so we have to give enough science information to help bridge that mismatch. So we made some assumptions, and I'll introduce you to my partners in just a minute. But we believe that it's both knowledge, a background knowledge, that makes for environmental health literacy, as well as some critical thinking skills. And that was our assumption going into our research. We believe that a person who has environmental health literacy can seek out, comprehend, evaluate, and use environmental health information. And as long as we couch that information in culturally and socially acceptable terms, then we can bring everybody into the fold. People need to use that information, as Liam was talking about, to make personal choices about their own lives. So, and these slides are in the handouts that you can download, I think, from the website. In using plain language, how many of you have heard the term plain language before? Then this is looking at things in a more, not necessarily dumbing down. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about clear communication. And we talk about specific hazards, but we also talk about the context of how environment can affect our health. So while we're talking in Tucson, where I work, one of our issues is trichloroethylene, and we've had that problem, and we have one of the biggest Superfund sites with trichloroethylene. But in order to make that make sense, we have to talk about the broader context of environmental health. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about my two projects, and you can see, here is my partner from Rochester and my research assistant who helped develop what I'm going to be sharing in just a minute. And in what I'm talking about in my environmental health literacy in American Indian communities, these are my two students who have really done a good bit of the work. So first, to define environmental health literacy, we used a mixed method approach. We did interviews, we did surveys, but the interviews were coded, grounded theory. We used grounded theory to code the interviews, and then from those interviews we created categories, and from those categories we created a survey. And the survey helped us understand the importance of a few things. So, grounded theory. You collect data, basically either face-to-face or in a on a telephone. In other words, it's one person to one person. And each interview was then transcribed and coded. And it was coded by all four of us who were working on the project independently, and then we met to talk about each of the codes. And so each of the interviews actually built on the previous interviews. It was about, I think it was 25, but we'll see in just a second. So it's a kind of a collective process of both taking data and analyzing data and then applying that into your future. So I'll show you in a couple seconds what the categories were. But first, it was 28. And basically, we were talking to professionals, a wide variety of professionals, educators, researchers, public health people, some of my partners in health literacy work in the libraries, and we were really talking to people who actually provided environmental information or environmental health information, including people from environmental programs. So we ended up with some notes to providers, which we have not, and providers in this case means information providers. And we have not really worked on those yet to really develop anything, but we developed 69 knowledge items and 37 skill items. And you'll see that then we took those items and did a survey. And about 275 people took the survey from across the United States, all of them, again, on the professional level. And so we developed what we think are the most essential knowledge and skills, and we hope that those having those knowledge and skills would actually lead to better health and better empowerment in communities. So you see, there's a lot over here that where we didn't get agreement, but to the right here, 50% of the people in the survey agreed. And so it was much fewer skills, which was a little bit surprising to us, and we're still working on trying to understand what the skills might be. But it was very clear agreement on the knowledge levels. So we know for sure that environmental health literacy requires knowledge. It may or may not include skills, and that, of course, every time you do research, what's the next thing you do? More research. So our future studies will work on looking at the skills and also on the notes to providers and on the Bloom's taxonomy method of thinking about environmental health literacy, because not everybody needs to have a big fund of environmental health literacy. They just need to know enough to be able to apply it. So when you're going up the triangle, applies kind of in the middle, and that's where we want to try to bring most people to. And then our community partners and the people that we engage with, we want to get them up to the create level. So let me go on and just talk about the model. So we think that it takes functional literacy. You have to be able to read at some level, but we don't think it requires high functional level. Some science literacy, which means some good background information both about biology and chemistry, and then an understanding of how all of that affects your health. So these are the four major categories of information that we think are essential. The environment gets into people. There are some environmental factors are protective and some cause problems. Choices are about environmental exposure, such as whether to drink, like I am right now, a bottle of water or drink city water. And in reality, probably the city water is probably the more, on most days, is the better choice. And then there's influence of social choices. So different communities have different importance about water, about air, about land. And above all, there are short-term and long-term effects, so that we can begin to understand that choices that we make about children, such as exposing them to the sun. I'm very fair. I had a lot of sunburns. I was a swimmer, and lo and behold, I have had skin cancer. So we want to make sure that we're talking about the eventual effects. The skills to find a trusted source, identify hazards, evaluate exposures, and understand that there is a connection between the hazard and an illness. So we believe environmental health literacy leads to better informed choices and the community being able to make choices that affect on a community-wide basis. For example, talking about TCE, the Superfund site has long been working towards cleaning up of the TCE, and what did we find? 1,4-dioxane. And so, in a proactive way, the city of Tucson started a cleanup program for the 1,4-dioxane even before a minimum contaminant level was established. So, I've worked a lot in tribal communities in Arizona. There's 22 in Arizona of various sizes, and some of the things that we have developed are what we call information walks. It's great to have a talk, but it's really good to be able to have a personal conversation about that talk. And so, but not everybody's really comfortable asking questions in a big group like this. And so my graduate students and I go, and when there's a talk by one of our faculty, we're in the back with displays of information. And then from those displays of information, we have flyers that are scaffolded from very, very basic information to more complex information. And we found that to work extremely well in American Indian communities. And lo and behold, it was because they helped me make those methods, not because I thought it up. It was because they thought it up. So that's been real important to our work. Most of you live somewhere near an American Indian community. There's only like these three here where there aren't too many American Indians. There, and in many cities, there's American Indians. So our new project is using storytelling to talk about environmental projects and environmental health issues in a way that can be absorbed by people. The Indian Health, one of the, my partners from Indian Health Service said, if I just say something, nobody listens. But if I tell a story, people begin to comprehend and they begin to ask me questions then that add to the story. So these are some of our, this is kind of our principle. First, start with their goals, add our goals, and you end up with a collaborative project. And here we have a faculty member speaking. Here's an example of an information walk. It's more than one station. So we subdivide here about the anatomy and how the lungs work. Here we're talking about how the environment can have hazards in it. Then here we're talking about how an individual's lung capacity might be measured. And then here, what are some of the indoor air problems, such as pets and stuffed animals, cockroaches, like that. Here we have a member reading one of our pamphlets standing at one of our stations. And here what we have is a collaborative process of deciding what's important. And because in tribal communities, it's not my opinion that matters. It's our opinion that matters. And so we have a slightly different process of voting and choosing things and doing evaluation than dominant culture. So some suggestions. Reading level may be important when you're making materials or when you're making a presentation. But more important is plain language and images that actually tell a story. One of the pieces that I used in my first research, there was a water tower. But the example was about parts per million was with a pool. There was no pool on the thing. There was a water tower. But no, there was no explanation about why there was a water tower. So it's confusing if you have images that don't work. From my American Indian work, listen first. It doesn't matter. Most people like to be listened to. I let my tribal partners take the lead, and I do what they want. And be sure to recognize them if you ever get a chance. Our next steps have to do with gaining more insight from the public about the knowledge and skills that might be involved. And in practice, we're developing some more models and methods to talk about 1,4-dioxane. And I look forward to having your questions later.